Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Bryan!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers on a Wednesday afternoon, joined by William Walter for some Wednesday tangents. Will, how you doing, big guy?
I mean, I'm great. It's the only thing I like better than a Tuesday on a Wednesday and a Friday on a Wednesday is a Wednesday on a Wednesday.
When we get it just right, it's the Goldilocks appearance by one William Walter. Really glad to have you here on this Wednesday afternoon to join me and kick around some tangents, Will. Looking forward to it. But first, folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents across civic media. If you want to learn more about what we're up to and where the next civic media station may be popping up in your neck of the woods, head over to the website, civicmedia.us. You can see all the shows, the stations. You can learn about where we're broadcasting here in Wisconsin, in Madison, on Devil Radio, 92.7 FM, WTTN, 1580 AM, in Waukesha, on the Shaw, WAUK, 540 AM, 101 FM, as well as around the state on various local civic media stations. Well, let's get started with something I thought that was pretty intriguing last night that popped up across my radar. And I said, that's interesting. And it's a piece written up by Scott Bauer over at AP News, headlined, "Lawsuit Seeks to Block Two Measures from April Ballot." So it seems like, you know, those nonpartisan, non-binding ballot referendum, just advisory questions for the state government that we've talked about, we've discussed on these airwaves.
I'm vaguely familiar. We've covered it a little bit, yeah.
Republican lawmakers saying, well, liberals use marijuana as a reason for their voters to go to the polls for years, so why can't we do something similar? Why can't we use ballot referendums to gin up support and get our voters to the polls come April? Well, it seems like they may have not done their diligence, and not all the T's were crossed and I's were dotted, and there's a lawsuit now filed yesterday in Wisconsin court to block.
It sounds like, Luke, they might have dotted their T's and crossed their I's on this one, huh?
I hate when that happens, Will. I hate when that happens. Just a little mix-up like that, but according to a lawsuit that was filed yesterday in Wisconsin court, these referendum were not submitted on time or to the correct officials. So let's get into this piece written up by Scott Bauer over at AP News. A lawsuit filed Tuesday by Wisconsin criminal justice advocacy groups seeks to block two Republican-sponsored measures from appearing on the ballot, on the April ballot, arguing that they were not submitted on time to the correct elections officials. One question is a proposed constitutional amendment that would allow judges to consider more factors when setting bail for violent offenders. The other is an advisory referendum that asks voters if they believe that able-bodied, childless welfare recipients should be required to look for work. Again, we've discussed on this program before, a very redundant question because that's what Wisconsin's
already a requirement, Luke.
Yes. So these efforts were pretty blatantly put forward by the Republican lawmakers here in Madison to attempt to try to get more support. And they may have rushed it to the point where they weren't aware of all the deadlines, Will. And maybe it's because they were shaking off the rust. Let's be fair. They haven't been in legislative session for a while. They may have forgotten how to do it on time. They kicked up their feet under the desk and said, "We're done with work for the year." And that was the first week of March. in 2020.
Those 10-month vacations, Luke. I know I'm not at 100% when I come back from a one-week vacation. Now multiply that by 40.
You got to give yourself some time. You know, you gotta get back into the swing of things. You can't just jump right back in and expecting like it's riding a bike, Will. You gotta be able to prepare for this. And apparently, the legislature did not. They passed the measures on January 19th. State law requires them to be, quote, filed with the official or agency responsible for preparing the ballots, end quote, at least 70 days before the election. That made the deadline for submitting these questions January 25th. The legislature submitted the ballot measures with the State Elections Commission on January 19th, the day they were passed. The commission filed them with county election officials on January 26th and told the clerks that the measures should be placed on the April 4th ballot. The commission, in a memo to clerks certifying the measures for the ballot, addressed questions about the proper place to file such questions. The commission said it was the only entity where state-level referenda questions can be filed. But the lawsuit was filed against the Elections Commission in Dane County Court by Expo, Wisconsin, and Wisdom. Expo stands for Ex-Incarcerated People Organizing. It is an affiliate of Wisdom, a statewide faith-based organization. Both groups work with people who spent time behind bars and fight against mass incarceration. Both groups were opposed to the ballot measures. And this is what the lawsuit contends, Will. It argues that the measure should have been delivered to county clerks and the Milwaukee County Elections Commission by January 25th. It is those local officials, not the State Elections Commission, who prepare the ballot, the lawsuit contends. So this is going to come down to a technicality. Whether or not this the proper date was
whether or not rules apply to Republicans, Luke, is what I'm hearing here. Well, 70 days. Math checks out. That would be January 25th. January 26th is, in fact, after January 25th, I believe. Can I get a check on that? I'm no mathematician.
I already turned my calendar to February, so I'm so sorry. You're going to have to look for another expert to get you that one. But it is going to probably get at least fast-tracked, in my opinion. These ballots for April are going to have to be printed soon. Pretty much immediately after the primary results are in for the February 21st primary, April ballots will begin to get printed by local election officials. And so this is a small window. And how it's going to absolutely work is going to be interesting to see, because now the Dane County Circuit Court is going to have to review this lawsuit. I have a feeling there will be other parties that will get involved. The Republican legislature will probably take legal counsel through Will or one of the other conservative law firms here in Wisconsin to defend the legislature in this court, and we'll see. It may get fast-tracked to the state Supreme Court. But there is now a lawsuit filed saying that these ballot measures that Republicans were so hopeful they were going to get on the ballot for April may be in jeopardy now. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined on this Wednesday afternoon by William Walter. You're listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. If you want to join the conversation, 844-967-2789. What do you think, Will? Do you believe this is going to prevent these ballot measures from appearing in April? Or do you think this is just going to be a minor speed bump for those conservative interests that want to gin up support on the April ballot?
I mean, I think it's more likely than not that it will end up simply being a speed bump. To give a little context with a personal experience that I had in relation to the special election that's upcoming on this April ballot as well, the signatures for that election were due on January 3rd, hard due date of Jan 3rd, right? Mm-hmm. And we began gathering these signatures in the middle of December, approximately, when candidates began announcing for this race. That gave us, 2.5, 3 weeks to get all the signatures required. And 10 of those days were Christmas into the new year, which is essentially a time void that doesn't exist. I'm not going to tell anyone in their right mind to go knocking on strangers' doors at that point asking for signatures.
Well, so a lot of people are away on vacation for the holidays or visiting family and loved ones not at home. So yeah, that would be a tough time to do signature.
Unless they tried to fly Southwest. But that, you don't have to check a previous episode if you want to catch up on that a little bit. But I reached out to ask, you know, this hard deadline, January 3rd, does that exist as a hard deadline? Is this flexible in the sense that, you know, maybe it's a day later? No, this is a hard deadline. There's a reason deadlines exist, which makes perfect sense. I will not fault anyone for having a deadline and holding us to that deadline.
Well, some recent examples of these hard deadlines, Kanye West tried to file for getting on the primary ballot here in Wisconsin as a presidential candidate and missed the deadline by minutes in Milwaukee County during the county executive's primaries for signature submission to appear on the ballot in that contest for Milwaukee County Executive. You can't have duplicate names for signing of these nomination papers. And several candidates got removed because once the duplicates were assigned one specific person, whoever had it first on the filing paperwork, the other ones didn't count, and people were disqualified from the ballot because of the very stern rules determining these things. And so it will be interesting to see. I don't know how this is. I don't have a crystal ball. I'm not going to predict what can happen here in Wisconsin. We saw several lawsuits surrounding absentee ballot drop boxes that were decided very close to previous elections here in Wisconsin. It's going to be interesting to tell how this is going to play out. But there is now officially a lawsuit filed here in Dane County saying that these ballot referendum questions did not meet the deadlines for being delivered to the election officials that print the ballots.
And there's a reason you have these deadlines, Luke. Again, why are rules and regulations in place if you're not going to enforce them? It's the give a mouse a cookie, except it's with the Republicans. If you give them an inch, they're going to take a mile and a half.
Or more, depending on what they feel like trying to get away with on that given day. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents. I am joined by William Walter on this Wednesday afternoon. Again, if you want to share a tangent, contribute to what we're talking about, 844-967-2789. We got a couple other Wisconsin headlines we're going to get to. There was a Supreme Court candidate forum for a couple of the candidates. Not all four were there last night, but we're going to get into that as well as other updates from around the state and your tangents, 844-967-2789. Dueling Tangents is going to be right back. Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined on this Wednesday afternoon by William Walter. And you can join us as well, 844-967-2789. You can call or text, share your tangent with us here on Dueling Tangents. And Will, just to kind of put a bookend on the questionable future of these ballot referendum questions that were passed in time, but maybe not delivered to the proper officials on time, according to Wisconsin state law, at least according to this lawsuit that is contesting them from being on the April 4th ballot. There are two questions under consideration here. This lawsuit is looking to disqualify both of them because they missed the deadline by a day, allegedly. But one of the questions is, in my opinion, a little bit more egregious than the other. The welfare question. A redundancy. Already asking to take state opinion on something that is state law. They're not looking to take it under advisory of, oh, only 20% of Wisconsinites agree with us on this. Are we going to repeal that provision? Then that's not why they're doing it. They want to get more conservative-minded voters to the polls on April 4th. The other one is a little bit more questionable. Reforming bail, giving judges a little more leeway in how to assign bail when it comes to the legal system here in Wisconsin. And all four of this, as you pointed out, all four of the candidates running for the state Supreme Court support that amendment. And And I think there are interesting proposals like that for criminal justice reform that can be discussed. But if it missed the deadline, it missed the deadline. Am I right, Will?
Rules are rules. There's a reason they're there. If they didn't exist, people would push them as far as they could get away with.
Yeah, and so it will be interesting to see what comes of this lawsuit. But speaking of the state Supreme Court race, last night, two of the candidates of the four running for this race on the February 21st primary, only two will advance, but Dan O'Donnell hosting a forum last night, and that's a conservative right-wing talk radio host, hosting this forum between former state Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly and Waukesha County Judge Jennifer Doro. And it seemed like from the what I've read about this event, I was not there, Will. I don't know if you were. But from reading about this event, there was a little kumbaya somewhat, but also not at the same time. What are your thoughts on the forum that took place between Kelly and Doro yesterday?
Usually I'm all for that masochism, but I could not put myself through that event, unfortunately. I had to take the night off. It's not surprising to see conservatives hosting their own judicial nominees at a essentially private event for the conservative voters, as there have been a number of private events for Judge Mitchell and Judge Protasiewicz as well. I would like to see more events where all four candidates would show up, but actually I was speaking with Judge Everett Mitchell about a week and a half ago, and I asked, is there any more plans for another forum or debate type setting where all four candidates will be on the stage at the same time? And he said, no, unfortunately. I've been pushing for it, but it's just something that likely will not happen. And this was, you know, a couple of days after the WisPolitics forum in Madison that I attended, as we spoke about on the show. And there's just, you can't understate the value of having a person's own words directly attributed to them on a stage with the people they're going up against. So it would be very valuable if we could get every single candidate on stage together at the same point. But I think it's very unlikely for that to occur. So unfortunately, we do have to cover these type of events.
Yeah, there's only 20 days left before that spring primary, and civic media attempted to try to get something in the works. I can't say for certain that there's nothing there left, but there were attempts by organizations I know to get all four candidates on, and it seems like that has been a difficult thing to do since that WisPolitics forum last month. But they didn't really spar a whole lot. It seems like there wasn't an outright attack. That a lot of the infighting for conservatives on who to support out of these two candidates was not on display last night in the forum. We've seen different talking heads and spokespeople and whatnot kind of spar back and forth. But outside of Dan Kelly saying that he would not immediately endorse Jennifer Doro if he loses, it seemed like there was a lot of kumbaya. They were more focused on throwing jabs at the liberal-leaning candidates in this race and the media rather than each other.
And, you know, this, you mentioned it briefly, but I see a lot of parallels to the Tim Michaels, Rebecca Clefish primary, right? Where a lot of conservatives kind of dug in their heels as the not in the sense that I see your face that you're disagreeing with me, not in the establishment sense, yeah, from okay. The voter base sense, at least based on what I'm seeing on social media, there have been a number of the more establishment Clefish type supporters who are big Dan Kelly supporters now that have been frankly lambasting Jennifer Doro over not only the situation with her son, but for example, I believe it was last year or maybe, no, 2019, Jennifer Doro sentenced a man to zero jail time after killing his son while drunk driving. How did I hear about this story? It was shared by a supporter of Dan Kelly, yeah, who was also on the staff of Rebecca Clefish. So
I believe I went to high school with the individual that you're saying shared that story. So
small world.
Small worlds. Yeah. It is interesting. We're going to continue the conversation as well as get to your tangents. 844-967-2789. William Walter joining Dueling Tangents on a Wednesday afternoon. And Will, there's just so much more to get to because there's also a piece out about Michael Gableman, former state Supreme Court justice as well, over at the State Journal. We're going to get into that one in a little bit here. But continuing the conversation about everything relating to the state Supreme Court and former and soon to be, we'll keep talking about it here on Dueling Tangents.
Yeah, yeah, feeling good on a Wednesday. Sparkling thoughts. Give me the
welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined on a Wednesday by William Walter. And Will, I feel like that intro was for an audience of one. That was for you and you and alone. Evan, yeah.
I'm expecting that every single Wednesday from here on out.
Oh, Evan's writing checks that hopefully he can cash on future Wednesdays with William Walter.
Luke, you were just talking about how you love The Daily Show because of, yeah, it lets you recognize grown jokes, and then you turn around and completely whiff on a South Park joke. Are you serious?
I must have missed that episode. I'm sorry, man. That one, I was like, what is going on right now? And lo and behold, you picked it up. You got it. I
would be a bad... I wouldn't respect myself if I didn't pick up on a South Park joke that was made in that relevant of a moment.
Gotcha. Well, it's going to become maybe a regular Wednesday thing then with William Walter joining me here on Dueling Tangents. Brian, in an undisclosed location, working on something really awesome that we can't wait to tell you about. But if you want to learn more about what we're doing here at Civic Media, head over to the website, civicmedia.us. You can see all the stations. You can sign up to learn more about our growing network. And you can check out podcast versions like yesterday's show where Dan Schaefer joined me. Dan Schaefer, columnist of the Recombobulation Area, covering all things in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. Also, he and I discussed the Milwaukee Bucks that had an excellent win last night against the Charlotte Hornets. And Dan was correct. He predicted a win, and the Bucks delivered on that. And you can check out that entire podcasted episode of Dueling Tangents on the Dueling Tangents tab at Civic Media's website. But Will, here today we are talking about the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. Everything seems to be circling around the court right now. It is the center of the political universe, which is what Wisconsin is. And so this forum held by the conservative candidates for the state Supreme Court last night, moderated by Dan O'Donnell. I just find that funny, he being the moderator. Oh, it's just like the icing on the cake, but whatever.
The word moderate, even if that's not like the full word being used, should not be in the same sentence.
It was MC'd. Maybe that's a little bit better. He was the master of ceremonies for this forum. That probably describes his role a little bit better, too, and gets away from that word. But this event, it's an interesting explanation why Dan Kelly says he will not automatically endorse Jennifer Darrow. And you pointed it out to me, so why don't you share it with the listening audience on why former state Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly will not be endorsing Jennifer Darrow in this race if he were to lose on the February 21st primary?
Yeah, well, just to contextualize it a little bit, the reason it was noteworthy was because Jennifer Darrow said that if Kelly comes to the primary, he will unequivocally have her support. Okay?
So she was that's an emphatic response. That is saying, yes, I will support Dan Kelly if he makes it through the primary, and I do not.
Mm-hmm. Dan, on the other hand, says he can't endorse Darrow because of, get this, Judge Brian Hagedorn.
Justice.
Who has, quote,
Justice
Hagedorn, my apologies, because he has not followed through on his promise to be a judicial conservative. Not that he's not following the law. That's not what Dan Kelly is upset about. He's upset that he has not been a team player by siding with the Republicans on every lawsuit to come in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Wait. Is this the same Dan Kelly that, you know, criticizes Protasiewicz and possibly Everett Mitchell for being activist judicial nominee candidates?
See, it does happen to be the same Dan Kelly, weird. Luke. I'm sure it's purely coincidence. Now, this is also the same Dan Kelly who, I believe it was this morning, was retweeting Scott Pressler, who was a Stop the Steal insurrectionist and has a very long history of leading hate groups throughout the United States that national Republicans have gotten in trouble with. They've gotten in trouble with mainstream media for working with this individual in the past.
Yeah, and so that same Dan Kelly. Interesting. It's weird when he's talking about the conservative candidates, he frames it in not being a team player, and that's why he couldn't outright endorse Jennifer Darrow, but then criticizes the liberal-leaning candidates for being activist judicial candidates. And it's just, I don't know how you have that in the same event and then just don't have your mind explode from the cognitive dissonance that is those two separate ideas.
Shameless hypocrisy. I have to drop the Will Hoyt quote, Luke? It's going to be every time I come on, I'm going to have to drop the quote. So Kelly went on to say, I had to apologize to countless hundreds of people, and I won't be put in that position again. This is not politics. This is about the court. I will promote judicial conservatism in any way that I can.
Jesus. Oh, it's just comical to me that that's where it stands. So
the irony is palpable.
Yes, it is. It is very interesting to see that Dan Kelly not interested in endorsing, because Brian Hagedorn, who independently looked at Wisconsin law and at times sided with the conservative justices, at other times sided with the liberal justices on the current Wisconsin State Supreme Court. And that is the reason why Dan Kelly will not endorse.
Well, to be fair, Luke, he also added, I don't want to go to the people again and say I endorse a candidate when I don't know what that candidate will do. He is explicitly admitting that, A, he's embarrassed that he endorsed a person who wasn't a team player, and B, he expects to know what that candidate will do based on what? What Will is telling them behind the scenes?
No, the Federalist Society, yeah.
What the Federalist Society is saying? Yeah. Like, so he should know how these judicial conservatives are going to rule on cases because of what, Dan Kelly? Please fill in the blank. And at the same time, of course, as you mentioned, he'll turn around and criticize Protasiewicz and Mitchell for the WIS Politics Forum when they said, you know, the maps are rigged. This is unjust. Something has to be done about it. Dan Kelly has the audacity to come out and say, you're letting your opinions get in the way of your judicial experience.
And the state Republican Party is now coordinating with a Barron County man in a, petition or something to try to get Protasiewicz removed from the ballot under the guise that she broke judicial ethics. It's very interesting who has to play by what rules. And again, that gets back to, well, will the ballot referendums passed by the Wisconsin legislature actually appear on the April ballot because they missed it by a day without it being delivered to the proper election officials that administered those ballots? But Will, getting tangentially off the state Supreme Court, going to a former state Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman, who was tapped at the behest of Assembly Speaker Robin Voss in 2021 to look into the alleged voter fraud that occurred in Wisconsin that prevented Donald Trump from winning the state's 10 electoral votes and led to President Joe Biden receiving those 10 electoral votes. And if you thought this investigation that, I said the I word, I'm not supposed to say that around Gableman because it wasn't an actual investigation, but the special counsel's office's actions, I think, would be a better way to summarize what they were, are still ongoing. And this was a little bit of a surprise to me. A piece by Bill Loiters over at the Wisconsin State Journal, Will, popped up on my feed today, and the Office of the Special Counsel has now spent more than $2 million defending that legal office in court. Most of that $2 million, $1.5 million, for attorney's fees. So, Wisconsinites, we're still on the hook right now. We are being billed by conservative attorneys to represent Michael Gableman and his Office of Special Counsel in court still. And it is
very financially responsible of our Republican legislature, that's for sure.
February 1st of 2023, and there is still ongoing litigation and, oh my gosh, surrounding this Michael Gableman charade. That's what it was. It was a charade in 2021 and 2022 looking into the 2020 election. And so, I really, Will, I don't know what to do about this other than talk about it, because it is terrible, terrible, terrible stewardship of Wisconsin taxpayer dollars. Just,
well, as Dan Kelly would say, if Justice Brian Hagedorn had just been a team player, we wouldn't have to worry about any of this. We could have just overturned the will of the Wisconsin voters immediately, and we wouldn't have had to waste your $2 million.
$2 million is a very cheap price to pay for going in and trying to establish integrity in our elections again, even though nothing was ever found. All of his reports were just full of hearsay and allegations, but actual, no proof of voter fraud on any scale. And really a grotesque nature of going into nursing homes and interviewing residents of those homes on camera without them really being fully aware of what was going on to them. And then had the audacity to say, oh, well, it was the election officials that were trying to do the impropriety in these nursing homes, when they were simply tasked with trying to get individuals that wanted to vote the ability to vote in 2020. And so it's very grotesque. And the fact that we are still paying for these, like, I'm sure Robin Voss just wants this all to go away. Just the fact that he emboldened Michael Gableman to the point that Gableman was endorsing Voss's primary challenger.
I was going
to
say, don't forget, this didn't end until Gableman endorsed Voss's opponent. That's what really ended the investigation. Not the waste of money, not the impropriety, nothing along that line. Until Gableman stopped being a team player, he was allowed to basically siphon off taxpayer funds for his own personal gain.
Yeah, he was given a slush fund of, at the time, I believe it was $700,000 is what he was authorized to use by the Republican-led state assembly. And now we are up to more than $2 million, including nearly $1.5 million in legal fees, according to a report by WisPolitics. This is in the reporting written up by Bill Loiters over at the Wisconsin State Journal. It could yet rise by hundreds of thousands more. That's in part because Voss and attorneys for OSC, the Office of Special Counsel, are continuing to drag out litigation over the four records-related lawsuits brought by American Oversight, a liberal watchdog group. And that's important to point out as well, Will, because this is ongoing. They didn't keep any of the records of what Gableman was doing. And an organization came along and said, hey, we'd love to see the open records that are surrounding this office. We want to know how this office was conducting its business, what it was looking into, what it found when it came to anything that it was tasked to do. But again, it wasn't given a scope statement. It didn't do the basic necessities that an office of special counsel should have to do to receive the taxpayer funds it was receiving. And now Voss is defending his terrible record keeping, the inability to deliver any of the information that is required under open records laws here in Wisconsin. And so Voss is just going behind the scenes all out to defend his ability to create this office, fund it without agreement. But it wasn't signed off by Evers. This was not a law passed to create this office of special counsel. It was an act of the legislature to go and create an office that then ran roughshod and further degraded integrity in our elections. And now they're saying, well, we're going to continue to defend that office and those lawsuits. And
because it's a grift top to bottom, Luke. The legislature only did this to kind of throw a bone to some of the more rabid right-leaning individuals in the Wisconsin voting base. They didn't actually want to accomplish anything.
Voss, it didn't even work. Voss got primaried from those individuals. He couldn't appease them. They only wanted more. It is ridiculous to believe that Robin Voss was, it is
give a mouse a cookie, Luke.
Yes, and that's how you get to this insanity, because there are still these four pending cases, and it could rise by hundreds of thousands of dollars more, but more than $2 million of your and I's taxpayer funds spent on Michael Gableman and this office to try to undermine the election integrity here in Wisconsin. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. I'm joined on this Wednesday afternoon by William Walter. If you'd like to join us and share your tangent, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined today for Wednesdays with William Walter. If you want to join us, 844-967-2789. Will, it is February 1st. We are kicking off the
already. Jeez.
Yeah, January flew by, and it is February now, and the state of Wisconsin, through various events this month, will be celebrating Black History Month all throughout February. And that begins here in Madison, up at the state capitol. The several events will be held by members of the Legislative Black Caucus. 10 events in total throughout the month of February that focus on education, health, environmental justice, and business in Wisconsin's Black community. And it's a pretty interesting day, because the same day that we're kicking off Black History Month, Will, is the same day that the College Board that oversees AP classes throughout high schools across the country rolled back the content of what is included in AP African American Studies. And the College Board put out a really, really washy statement that says, oh, well, this, we weren't caving to political pressure. We were doing this for other reasons. But we've got to be honest, Will. This is because...
this was done because of Ron DeSantis.
Yes, and there,
almost exclusively.
There has been a history of scholastic organizations and publishing have done similar things. Like, the state of Texas is one of the largest purchasers of history books because of the size of the state of Texas. And so in Texas before, there's been the molding of what is and is not included in history textbooks, because Texas wouldn't buy certain history books. And so this is kind of par for the course on how we as a country unfortunately handle these situations. But yes, Ron DeSantis was working the refs. He said that AP African American Studies would not be taught in Florida classrooms, and the College Board caved. And it removed the content that Ron DeSantis, the state of Florida, was criticizing. And even then, and if you want to say, okay, well, this isn't political pressure that led to this, now there is a portion of that course, that AP course, that includes Black conservatism. Very fascinating, Will, that they remove the politically charged, as Ron DeSantis believes, Black Lives Matter movement, but then included Black conservatism in this course after amending the other aspects of it.
Yeah, it's almost as if they consider anything that's not conservative to inherently be radical liberal. Like, you're either with us or you're against us. Team player, mob mentality, right? We've been talking about it all show in regard to the Supreme Court race. It just seems that's how the entire party operates. If you either are a rabid conservative or you're a radical liberal. No matter what your ideology might be, if you're different than us, you are inherently bad and you are inherently wrong. And they're essentially admitting that the entire course for them was just a partisan project to try to, you know, garner interest from their base at the national level. You look at what the College Board purged. It included the names of many Black writers and scholars historically associated with critical race theory, the queer experience, Black feminism, as well as removing Black Lives Matter from the formal curriculum. This was not done for the academic integrity of the students, right? I mean, anybody who's going to argue that with a straight face is arguing in bad faith.
Well, David Coleman, the head of the College Board, said in an interview that the changes were all made for pedagogical reasons, not to bow to political pressure. Quote, "At the College Board, we can't look to statements of political leaders," he said. "The changes," he said, "came from," quote, "the input of professors and long-standing AP principals." Sure.
Well, then why can't we have a Black progressivism option if we're doing this, like, both sides of the aisle thing?
No, they didn't cave to political pressures, Will. They took the input from professors and from long-standing AP principals. What kind of AP principals are those? That's interesting to have those AP principals include the 25% roughly of the course content that was in there being attacked by Ron DeSantis and Republican state lawmakers in Florida, but then removed once that political pressure was applied. But it wasn't the political pressure that led to it. I don't know how you come out and put that statement out after caving like this, Will. It's fascinating that is the statement coming out of the head of the College Board. But again, we are now in a state of affairs that the state of Florida is removing all books off of its bookshelves because they don't want to receive fines or get fired or appear.
I mean, this kind of sounds like indoctrination, doesn't it? You'll do and say and learn what we tell you to do and say and learn, and if we don't like it, we'll have it removed from the curriculum.
Yeah, that's exactly what it sounds like. And the conservative movement that said, well, we believe in local control and for parents to determine what is good through the school boards for their individual school districts, that's all said and gone now. This is the overarching state passing movements in Florida that is causing local officials to not know it's the same approach as abortion
care in Wisconsin. Yeah. Yeah.
The healthcare professionals are not offering abortion services during this legal limbo period that we are in because it is unknown what the actual laws are now that Dobbs was decided by the state or by the U.S. Supreme Court and overturning Roe v. Wade. In that decision, healthcare providers are left in this limbo.
When you're facing questionable legal repercussions, you can't ask someone to put their career, their life, the money that's going to put food on their family's table. You can't ask them to put that on the line without knowing how any of these decisions are going to be made.
Yeah. And so anybody that tells me that, oh, well, yeah, I'm a small government conservative and I support Ron DeSantis going forward as governor of Florida. And if he were to run for president, I say to that, I don't think you know what those things that you're saying actually mean, because that is not what Ron DeSantis is doing in Florida. This is indoctrination. This is forced large government of the state of Florida determining what can and cannot be taught in their schools. Folks, you've been listening to Dueling Tangents. Really appreciate you, Will, for joining me on this Wednesday afternoon. If you missed any portion of the show, go check out the podcast. You can also follow the show on Twitter at Dueling Tangents. You can follow Will and I there as well. And we'll be back maybe for a different edition, and we'll have to see what day Will pops up next.
I don't know yet what I think of Wednesdays on a Monday or Wednesdays on a Thursday. I'll have to figure that out in the near future.
We'll have to see. We'll have to see how those feel for you. But I really appreciate you joining me, Will. Everybody, Dueling Tangents will be back tomorrow at 2 p.m. Talk to y'all then.
Take it easy, party people. Kiss me, please.